Growing businesses and finance professionals, you need Bill Spend and Expense, the free-to-use spend management software. It's powered by the Bill Divvy Corporate Card, which helps growing companies scale with credit lines of $500 to $15 million, automated expense reports, and as many virtual cards as you need. For a limited time, get $500 when you get started with Bill Spend and Expense. Request a demo at bill.com/get500. Terms and conditions apply. Advertised credit ranges are not guaranteed and are determined at approval. Card issued by Cross River Bank, member FDIC.
Throughout ancient cultures around the world, stories contain certain divine weapons forged by the gods themselves. Objects formed and imbued with the primal energies that comprise the very essence of the universe itself. Some of the weapons are wielded by mortals in the form of earthly weapons. Others are reserved for the gods simply because of the sheer destructive potential some of them possess. These celestial armaments take the form of thunderbolts, fireballs, and some are simply massive waves of total annihilation. Some scholars have begun to question the descriptions of these relics as to whether they could possibly represent what we would recognize now as something akin to modern-day atomic weapons. Not only do the supporters of this theory point to accounts translated from ancient texts, but also claim that certain archaeological and geological sites present physical evidence of the deployment of radiation-producing weapons in ancient times. This case file joined the theorists as they drop the bomb and stride across the wastelands of ancient atomic weapons.
Welcome to Alien Theorist Theorizing Case File 206, Ancient Atomic Weapons. I'm Braden.
I'm Zell.
I'm Dan.
And I'm Andrew.
We're about to go nuclear.
Let's get wild.
In your asses.
Oh no. Braden's already talking asses.
Is that right?
Fucking 30 right? Seconds in.
Yeah. Trigger warning.
We're talking about
nukes.
Hey, well, we're also talking about your great ancestors, right? The Bradonians, they're from fucking Sodom, aren't they? Isn't that where they got the name from?
Yes, that's what I'm named
Isn't that
after.
Where that comes from?
Probably, I don't know.
Checks
don't
know.
Air into butt stuff. Yeah, right? Well, they fucking got the name from it.
There you go. Talking about Sodomites.
Exactly.
Anyways, this is an interesting concept. When we first... When I saw it on the list, I was like, oh, okay. We get into it. I'm like, oh, okay. There's some cool stuff here. There's some cool stuff to talk about. So why don't we get right into it? Where does this theory come from? Where does it begin?
The theory of ancient civilizations possessing atomic weapons, specifically, we're going to concentrate more on atomic weapons as opposed to like the possibility of them having directed energy weapons, which we'll make a distinction between the two, and we'll put it at atomic weapons only. So the theory of ancient civilizations possessing the technology in order to produce and use either large scale or small scale, in like a tactical sense, nuclear bombs, comes from it. There's a very long genesis to this, but probably the most popular, the popular voice among those that put forth the hypothesis that perhaps these ancient cultures were in possession of the secrets of the atom. It's probably Von Daniken. If you've read Chariots of the Gods, 1968, OG, then you have heard Von Daniken expound on his theory, or at least, you know, cite certain ancient texts that there is proof that these weapons existed. That entire cities, entire civilizations were destroyed in a matter of seconds and by some type of technology that was not fully understood at the time.
Wasn't Morning of the Magicians before that, though?
Magicians of the Gods?
No, Morning of the Magicians. The two French dudes wrote that book. Where
right.
Von Daniken sourced a bunch of it, right?
Yeah. So, Von Daniken's works came out 8 years after, almost a decade after those. But yeah, two French guys by the names of, I'm probably going to get these wrong, Louis Pauvels and Jacques
Put a little peanut butter on it. Put a little peanut butter on it. You got it.
Had originally came out. And then they wrote their book, like you mentioned, The Morning of the Magicians, which they took a lot of, which they took a bunch of theories similar to the ancient astronaut hypothesis as we know it now. But they built upon the work of another scholar, a Soviet mathematician and ethnologist known as Matest M. Agrest, who in 1959 argued originally that perhaps the story or the biblical tale of Sodom and Gomorrah being destroyed was actually evidence for a nuclear bomb being sent down by perhaps extraterrestrial or ultra-terrestrial, whatever you want to call them, spaceships.
Now, they say ET, they don't actually say like advanced civilizations. They actually say it's like an actual ET species that's doing this, the gods. Because if you go with other theories, it was just us. We became advanced back in this time, and we destroyed ourselves.
Right. So going to back look at the ancient text, so it's Genesis 23. By the time Lot reached Zoar, the sun had risen over the land. Then the Lord rained down burning sulfur on Sodom and Gomorrah from the Lord out of the heavens. Thus he overthrew those cities and the entire plain, destroying all those living in the cities and also the vegetation in the land. But Lot's wife looked back and she became a pillar of salt. So if you don't remember it, you know, I think most people kind of have a general idea of the the history of Sodom and Gomorrah. That's where we get the word Sodomites from. Remember.
Do they? I have no idea anything about it.
Right. Well, they were punished because it was a city full of sodomizers and people who were not friendly to guests, if I remember correctly.
Oh, mm-hmm. Like Zell. Back to sun.
Yeah.
So this rain of sulfur and fire that was rained down by the god or gods could possibly, according to Matest or Agrest, could have been interpreted as alien spaceships deploying some type of nuclear or destructive device onto these cities for some reason.
Doesn't sound overly atomic though, right? Like there's no blast wave or anything like that. Like,
well, if you think about it, what are the characteristics of an atomic blast?
High heat, bright light, shockwave.
Listen, I'm almost an expert in everything nuclear because when we went to Vegas, I sat at that, I went to the Atomic Museum with these guys.
That's true.
And I was higher than I've ever been. And I think I sat at that dial where you turn and watch the nuclear blast. I think I sat there for an hour and 45 minutes just watching the nuclear blast frame by frame. It was definitely
an inordinate amount of time. I remember marking that.
I thought you were going to bring back the fucking SkyTrain story, but all right.
I was there and I turned around and I just see Zell and Brayden just standing at that video table, just like rewinding it back and forth over and over.
It's fucking mesmerizing watching. Like it shows all the trees fall down and the blast wave and the light. You're like, holy shit, we made that thing. And we also touched the prototype, the shell of a bomb. We turn the arm switch on.
Yeah. I've armed a nuclear weapon.
Yeah.
The one thing that's cool though, I was doing some reading and then we don't have definitive proof. Well, we don't have definitive proof of Sodom and Gomorrah even fucking existed to begin with.
They're gone.
But we don't even really know where this present day location, is. But a lot of people think that maybe Sodom is present day, Tel al-Hammam, which is in fucking Jordan.
Yep.
So one of the cool things that one of these archaeologists found there was they found pottery shards and the outer surfaces of these pottery shards were melted into glass.
Are you saying party shards?
Pottery shards?
I thought you said party shards. I mean,
they possibly could have been party.
They could have been party.
I mean, those could have been kegs back in the day. I don't know.
But anyway, so they found them with melted glass, bubbled mud brick and partially melted building material, right? Which is all indications of like extremely high heat. So they're thinking like somewhere around 2000 degrees Celsius.
Yeah. And like this was like this article, I'm not sure if we'd read the same one, but it just came out like on the 22nd of September. And they're saying that, yeah, that this Tal yep. how do you say it? Tal al-Haman. Just like that.
I'm assuming.
It could have been Al-Haman. It could have been one of the, there's like three metropolises there, and they say maybe Sodom and Gomorrah was part of this. And they think that this was actually wiped out. Well, in the article, they don't actually say atomic blast, but what is similar to an atomic blast would be some type of meteor strike, airburst, or the like.
Well, and just like you said, Zell, you go back to a rain of burning sulfur and heavy smoke and fire lasting to the next day. Like those, that doesn't sound like atomic blast.
And usually, I mean, we talk like the characteristics of an atomic blast, like normally, at least with the atomic weapons that humans are
proficient
with.
Yeah.
You could say like, you know, usually it's like an airburst. It's like you set it off above a target. There's a certain altitude above the thing. When I was in the Navy, I went to Hiroshima. Ooh. And we went to like the nuke museum there, which was pretty nuts. Like seeing all of the stuff that they had preserved from the actual blast site of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. But learning about how they deploy the actual bomb, like it's got an altimeter in it and then it sets off the nuclear reaction. You set it off above where you want it to do the most damage. Like if there's a certain altitude where it's like, if you set it off there, it's the blast wave that does the most damage. So it's like that pressurized blast wave coming down from above onto a city, which does most of the damage.
That's interesting. I never thought of it like that, because I always thought of it as like in my peanut brain of like, woo, crater. Right.
Yeah. Well, that's what we see though. Like that's whenever you see, you know, something in a movie or a cartoon. I played like
Missile Strike or whatever. Missile Defender.
Missile Commander.
Is that the one with the tanks?
Accurate. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's
ooh, and then puts little craters. That's
my kind of technology.
Yeah. So it's like, when you say that, I'm like, oh yeah, that makes way more sense that you would burst it in the air, because it probably cause way more catastrophic damage than hitting the ground first.
And as a result of it detonating above the target, you have this downward thrust. So it's like the pressure is pushing down on, it's like a giant hammer just like slamming down onto the ground, like pushing buildings and such would just be like crushed and pushed down. Like a compression is normally what you would see as a result of a detonate of a high one of those altitude nuclear weapons. And so not only that, you have things like the distortion of buildings. So there's this kind of, you know, for these, like you have a blast wave that pushes out, but there's also evidence of like it pushing in. So once you vaporize all that air, you push out all that air because, you know, essentially you're just pushing everything out. It all has to come back in,
right?
So you have this other evidence of stuff like pulling in to fill in the vacuum that was left after the detonation.
It's crazy that this technology in modern times, we developed it. Cause we, like, as Brayden said, like when you think of like the testing, like the bomb testing at, was it White Sands testing grounds or whatever?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's where they blow it up in the ground the first time. And it makes like a 500 foot crater. Test.
I'm pretty sure it was Bikini Bottom, actually. But
no, that was the hydrogen bomb, I believe, the first
Bikini Atoll. The Trinity, Zell, you're talking about the Trinity test.
Yeah, so that was the very first bomb. Then, like, wasn't it like almost immediately after, like 6 days later, is when they're like, all right, we're just going to take this new devastating tech and we're going to drop it on an enemy city and then another one. It's fucking crazy. This wiped two cities.
Well, they only had two at the time. I don't think they only, if you go back to like, I mean, the history of the atomic weapons is fascinating, but yeah, it's like we only had two at the time and we're like, we got to drop them. But if they didn't surrender after the second one, we were like, we didn't really have a third one.
Didn't have another.
For him to go.
Yeah, it wasn't ready.
Now, it's one of the things too that kind of leads people to this theory of like potentially atomic weapons in ancient times. Is that with what you were talking about, Zell, is these White Sand Proven Ground tests, the Trinity test, like afterwards, Oppenheimer was, you know, who basically developed it in the Manhattan Project. He was asked if Trinity was in fact the first ever detonation of an atomic device. And Oppenheimer replied, and I quote, yes, in modern times.
Yeah, so this is the catch-all. This is what most people point to as like evidence for ancient atomic weapons, because we're going to get to that next. It's like the ancient Vedic text.
Well, yeah, because he likes to quote, like he quotes the Bhagavad Gita. Basically what he says, now I've become death, the destroyer of words or of worlds.
Worlds. Yeah. Yeah.
You're the destroyer of words.
That's fair. Well, I don't know about that.
Oh, wow.
Zing, wow. That, bitch.
Woo! Zing. Woo. Shots fired.
Call me bitch. That was fucked up.
In a friendly way.
Called up. You bitch.
Zell. You can't read in your bitch. Thanks, Zell. Thanks, man. Feels
that's
good.
Hilarious. Yeah.
That's good.
I take a lot, so I got to give it back once in a while.
Nobody gives you anything. I've seen what you've done to somebody that called you potato head. I've been on eggshells for fucking 5 years doing this podcast. I don't even say nothing to you. But yeah, so it kind of shows like that he's, you know, pays attention to the fucking ancient past and is super interested in that type of shit. But that same thing, if you read the book that Dan put in the notes, that's not proven that he actually said that.
Well, no, it is proven that he did say the, become
but
death.
But the modern times thing is
the
not
modern
proven.
Times bit is perhaps something that is a bit of
exaggeration,
perhaps lore. Yeah. Exactly. That he said that kind of has become attached to Oppenheimer. But no, the part that you mentioned, yeah, no, he actually did that. And that was meant to be as a reflection on his, his hand in his responsibility, for creating the atomic bomb. And he was aware of, you know, where he sat in that. And he was also kind of interested and fascinated by Hindu culture as well. So he knew these things. But speaking of Hindu culture, that's another part, another part that becomes integrated in the theory for, or those who push forward the theory that there are atomic weapons. So a lot of times, especially in a lot of those shows dealing with the ancient astronaut theory, you have them citing text from the Mahabharata and other Vedic texts. So the ancient Hindu texts, essentially their Bible, about certain events, which actually sound a lot more like a nuclear explosion. Mm. Because in what we just talked about, Sodom and Gomorrah, like you said, it doesn't necessarily sound too much like an atomic bomb. It sounds more like something, you have a rain of sulfur, a rain of fire is not exactly.
Yeah, it's really, reading that, and I'm like, okay, we're stretching on these descriptions to make this comparison.
Well, yeah, the rain of fire almost sounds like you could say that's
it
either-
sounds like a meteor.
Well, meteor, like a fragmented meteor, or like a volcanic eruption, and like you're getting hit with like falling, like fiery from, sulfur debris, you know?
Maybe from a distant, like super volcano or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
That is, to me, if we're going like Occam's razor, like the simplest, I'm like that, that description fits with other things way better than a nuke.
And so another quote that's usually pulled from, actually, I think Chariots of the God, that's attributed to the Mahabharata, is one that in an event where there is a battle. I mean, if you're not familiar with the Mahabharata or the Vedic text, it's usually like a bunch of like battles between gods and demigods.
Hey, it sounds fucking awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty rad. It's pretty. Right?
Someone needs to adapt that shit to a movie.
Yeah. Let's go Amazon. I'll watch that.
Monkey demigods who can clone themselves and turn giant and grow 100 hands and all kinds of stuff that kind of goes on. One of those, this quote is pretty much, it was as if the elements had been unleashed. The sun spun round, scorched by the incandescent heat of the weapon. The world reeled in fever. Elephants were set on fire by the heat and ran to and fro in a frenzy to seek protection from the terrible violence. The water boiled, the animals died, the enemy was mown down, and the raging of the blaze made the trees collapse and rose as in a forest fire.
Oh, that sounds a little different.
Hey, my eyebrows raised to that one, because from watching, there is a specific video when you go to if you go to Vegas, honestly, go off the beaten path a little bit, go to the Nuclear Testing Museum. It's fucking wild. It's awesome. But one of the videos you can slow-mo is of a nuke hitting a forest. And like when I read that line of the raging blaze made the trees collapse and rose as in a forest fire, like you watch this just row of trees just like get eviscerated, just boom, gone.
But did they light on fire though?
dude, they melt before the shockwave. They're just like,
well, that's a like boom. Usually you'd get like thermal burns. You're not going to have fucking, you're going to have flammable material lighting on fire, but you're not, elephants are going to fucking light on fire.
Why not?
From an atomic bomb, that wouldn't happen. You get thermal burns. You wouldn't, they're not flammable. They wouldn't light on fire.
Sure. Flesh can burn at high enough heat.
Yeah, yeah. Thermally, like thermal burns, not lighting on fire is what I'm saying.
Oh, so like instead of lighting on fire, they're just going to turn to ash.
Yeah, well, they're good. Or you'll just have like thermal burns on your skin and shit like that. Like you're not necessarily going to be fucked. Depends on how close you are to the initial blast, obviously.
Yeah, but I'm saying 2,000 degrees.
Shit doesn't normally get lit on fire though, like unless this is highly flammable.
I hear your point, Andrew. And to counter your point, what I'm going to say is anyone who was close enough to witness this was probably dead. So the people writing this probably witnessed the aftermath of these burnt ass elephant. They were like, they were on fire. Look at these things. Maybe. They must have been on fire. Right? Because
them running around on fire. You'd have to be like close to actually, like, they're not describing how they've come on the remains. They've describing them actually like getting impacted and sprinting around on fire.
Elephants were set on fire by the heat and ran to, see, you might have seen burnt elephants after running, like, and they're just.
What if you had, if these were like elephants, working elephants, what if they were wearing, you know, flammable, they had like a saddle, or they had cloth on them, you know, maybe something was either way. This one, it sounds a little more like an atomic blast.
A little bit more. Yeah.
And you know, you got elephants dying, chariots set ablaze, burnt bodies, you know, possibly by either the heat from the blast or bright flash ignition, which is a quality of a nuclear blast. But also this quote, which is that specific quote is usually pulled out for many reports or people trying to push this theory. And this quote is actually pulled from, it's translated into English from an 1889 German translation of the Sanskrit. But it's never cited where it was taken from the totality of 1.8 million words in the epic from the Mahabharata. Like the Vedic texts are huge. Like they're like, especially,
it's like thousands of years of history.
Thousands of pages. And if you go back to some of these shows, and I know it sounds really awesome, and it always sounds really cool when they quote this stuff, and it always sounds really cool. But I've never heard them say exactly where it's from, like where they pull that quote from.
So basically what you're saying is anytime I make a bold claim on this show from now on, I just say, as quoted in the Mahabharata.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I'd have to go through all that,
or you can just quote David Childress, just quote him because he quotes it.
David Childress is a big proponent of the ancient atomic weapon hypothesis. He usually pulls it, and it's usually him that quotes this. I know he said it in at least one or two of his books, and he pulls out that quote often. And there are some that would say that he takes a bunch of excerpts from the Mahabharata and kind of like
meshes them
together, maybe it does a little puzzle piecing. So maybe. I don't think he's ever admitted to it. So yeah.
So wait, this original translation then is they're quoting this guy, but we can never find where this guy is pulling it from. He might have just put together a bunch of different chapters and pulled something together, or it just might be made up.
You can actually look up, so the Vedic texts like the Mahabharata, the Bhagavad Gita, those ones are actually available online. You can find fairly accurate, or the ones translations that that were available are online. I think Project Gutenberg, which is a kind of internet text archive project, has some of it. Project Gutenberg has a bunch of like stuff that's past its copyright.
Oh, like
what's that?
Freehold or whatever.
Well, like I said, there's some pretty bold claims attributed to the Mahabharata without citing where it comes from. Like the one I read in one of the articles you posted, Dan, describes nuclear war basically a single projectile charged with all the power in the universe, an incandescent column of smoke and flame as bright as 10,000 suns, rose in all its splendor. It was an unknown weapon, an iron thunderbolt, a gigantic messenger of death, which reduced to ash an entire race.
Boom.
The corpses were so burnt as to be unrecognizable. The hair and nails fell out, pottery broke without any apparent cause, and the birds turned white.
Damn, sounds like the fucking beginning of Terminator 2.
Yeah, a little bit
wild. Yeah.
And do they, I mean, and of course, like when they put that awesome quote all together, they put at the bottom, like what book it's from and what lines of text it's from.
No, they don't. Oh, funny enough.
Oh, okay. All right. Neat.
But that one sounds like the power of, what does it say? Power of all the universe?
The power in a single projectile charged with all the power in the universe. An incandescent column of smoke and flame as bright as 10,000 suns.
So that sounds more like an atomic bomb. That's like a mushroom cloud.
Yeah, it sounds exactly like a nuclear weapon if you were to pull that quote from that. And I would be very impressed if they told me exactly where that went. If I could lay my own eyes on it, I'd be like, that is super neat. That is
yeah, super you cool. can't.
They're not great at sourcing their material now, are they?
Sometimes not so great.
Not with the Mahabharata.
No. I mean, it's a lot of words, so I mean...
Well, they even pulled stuff from the Dead Sea Scrolls where they didn't source it properly.
Looking for, like, trying to find, like, some of these quotes in the Mahabharata. You can do it. I mean, it's possible to do. Some people have done it. Or at least try to source this information, try to find, like, supporting evidence for these quotes in the Mahabharata itself. One of them is like you have from book 7, I think, is there is a line in there. There's a couple lines that describe what is similar to what the original quote that we were discussing about the elephant set a fire, but it's a little bit different. Kind of goes like, from all the points of the compass, cardinal and subsidiary, from the firmament and the very earth, showers of sharp and fierce arrows fell and issued with the impetuosity of Garuda or the wind struck and burnt by those shafts of Aswataman.
What?
That well all endued with the impetuosity of the thunder.
I seen that word and I was waiting for you to stumble and nope, just straight through it.
The little comma under the S, it signifies like the soft season.
It was amazing.
Yeah, I also thought you were going to stop. I was like, how is that one? This is going to be interesting. I should have known better that you probably had practiced it a couple times.
Now, what is that word? What is that a god or something? Or what? Like
shaft of Aswataman?
Struck and burnt by the shafts of Aswataman.
I know who Garuda is, but I don't know who... Aswataman is probably some sort of demigod of archery or some sort, or maybe a sun god. Not sure.
Yeah. Now, showers of sharp and fierce arrows. That kind of sounds like the Sodom and Gomorrah one, like, you know,
the meteor.
Yeah. Like kind of fragments or something.
I mean, like, not once have we, like, we kind of got it on the one before where Braden quoted, but we haven't ever gotten like the definitive mushroom cloud description or anything like that yet.
No, but the shower of fierce, sharp, fierce arrows fell. Whenever I read this one, I thought of, I watched a TED talk or something about someone that was talking about potentially the asteroid impact that potentially killed off the dinosaurs. And they talked about that it hit so hard that it actually shot debris back out into space.
Yep.
From the impact, and then that impact, like that debris would kind of float around Earth before it would be brought back down. And as it was brought back down, it would get supercharged and heated, like irradiated, supercharged, and like melted coming back into the atmosphere. And it basically would just rain fire all over Earth.
Yeah, but how long would it take for that shit to come back, you think?
I don't know.
Depends on how it went. Thing. Yeah.
I feel like it'd be a delayed, like it would be a while, wouldn't it?
Well, I mean, there'd probably be a constant stream.
Yeah, but they would describe the initial impact and then that shit coming back afterwards, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
And the initial impact's likely to fucking wipe anybody out anyway.
Yeah, it's true.
Or the impact was maybe the impact was somewhere else on the planet and that was the ejecta falling somewhere else.
That's a good point.
Or, as we said, some type of like volcanic. But then, but volcanoes also produce like a pyroclastic flow, like that big ass ash cloud and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, here's it, like... Your list, I'm assuming anyways, could just be my fucking ignorance, but like I'm assuming your list of descriptive words You know what I mean? It's pretty limited at this point in time. So like anything raining down, like you're probably going to compare it to, you know, probably either like falling rocks or arrows or something like that. Right. Like maybe they just, they don't have very, you know, or maybe this is just our way of like translating it too. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's that's a possibility.
Or hear me out here. If this is, you know, if you wanted something, if you were like, I don't know if our civilization is going to last. Maybe you would want to write down these stories in things that were very simplistic as to not confuse people, right? Because if there was a word that no one, that you were like, you know, like if we started writing a paper about nuclear fission, fusion and all this stuff, you'd be like, you know, and then like our society collapses and then 100 years someone's reading it, you'd be like, huh? What is this? I don't understand any of this. What are they talking about?
So I think you guys have perfectly summed up the problematic nature of actually reading, you know, written accounts of these things, how they possibly language barriers can possibly lead to misinterpretation or things like this. But what about physical evidence, which there are some that are quite compelling.
Oh, shit. Just before we get to the physical evidence, quick beer. We'll be right back.
Take control of your growing company's finances with Bill Spend and Expense, the free-to-use spend management software powered by the Bill Divvy Corporate Card. With credit lines from $50,000 to $5 million, Bill Spend and Expense is here to help you thrive. Say goodbye to manual expense reports and juggling multiple cards, and say hello to saving time and eliminating wasteful spend. Try Bill Spend and Expense today at bill.com/promo500 and get $500. Terms and conditions apply. Advertised credit ranges are not guaranteed and are determined at approval. Card issued by Cross River Bank. Member FDIC.
We're back. And so, as we mentioned before, that leave you hanging in the first half, we have a little bit of physical evidence to go along with the ancient atomic weapons hypothesis, since literary accounts or perhaps can be sometimes deemed unreliable. You have places that are usually cited or referred to that are examples of perfect evidence of something happening, of some type of weapon being deployed on these or some type of event causing strange remains and damage to building, things like this. The two major sites, archaeological sites, that are usually referenced are Mohenjo-Daro and Harappa. Usually Mohenjo-Daro more than any of the other ones.
So did they find like a shell of an old bomb or something?
No.
Because that would be fucking awesome.
Yeah, that would be super cool if they found a shell of an old, and that would totally upturn everything that we know. But usually, you have like these two places. Mohenjo-Daro specifically is an archaeological site of one of the largest Indus Valley cities, which apparently thrived from around 2000 BCE. So before Common Era. So 2000, what is that? 4,000
years ago. Yeah.
And so this is usually the big one that a lot of ancient atomic weapons proponents will point to, being that the evidence that's cited is that Mohenjo-Daro had a series of bodies that were discovered within the city itself. So you had a number of bodies that seemed to be laying unceremoniously or unburied in the streets. Some of them seemed to be holding hands like they had been perhaps struck down suddenly, like just being on the streets or something like that. These bodies have been discovered between 1922 and 1931 when they were originally excavating the city. And there's a total of 37 bodies that had been found. So this is usually the one that's kind of pointed to as the place to be, or these, I think it's Mohenjo-Daro, Harappa, and I think, is it Jodhpur or?
Jodhpur is like the modern city around there.
Right.
But they're pretty close. Yeah.
Yeah, they're all within that little area. And these were the ones that are usually pointed to, saying that, you know, the bodies that were found here are found in such position that would possibly indicate that they had been struck down in an instant, or, you know, that something had happened with so quickly that the inhabitants of these cities didn't have time to react. And so they were just kind of, you know, as would probably happen with a nuclear weapon of some type.
Well, yeah, if you were, say, you're on the outskirts of like the air blast, and you just got, you wouldn't see it coming. It would just hit the town and hit the people. You just go flying through the streets and you just end up dead wherever you landed, pretty much. I guess, because it wouldn't, but if the bomb hit the city, would the bodies just be intact, just like lying there? Or would they be like vaporized if there was like a direct hit?
Well, I mean, that's a really good question. As, you know, seeing as a lot of the city, which was mainly constructed of pretty much just like mud bricks, is still standing.
Right. So then it would have been maybe not.
So
in
what
the,
you're saying is mud
line.
Bricks are invincible to nuclear weapons.
If you want to build a bunker to withstand, if you want to build a bug out bunker, mud bricks is the way.
Mud bricks.
So, yeah, it's usually pointed to that. And it's always referenced that some of these skeletons exhibit some type of, you know, higher background radiation than other, you know, their surroundings. So it's like that they had absorbed some type of a large amount of radiation than their surroundings. So it's being like, okay, well, now this atomic radiation, they're irradiated. So,
well, maybe it's like, so like a really rapid, like radiation poisoning or something.
Perhaps, but I'm also running through some of this. I'm not quite sure that any of this stuff is kind of sourced, because you go into and you dig into some of this and some of these skeletons, like it's never really mentioned about any type of unusual radiation. Like they have been, like I said, they've been excavating these cities since the 1920s, and it's never really mentioned or noted about, you know, in any of the archaeological journals or any type of like historical.
It's noted on every single video if you type in ancient atomic weapons.
Of course. Yes. And of course they put in there exactly where they got that information, right? They note the academic journal where it was published. No. Okay. All right.
I remember reading about this when we did the Viamanas.
Yep. Case, yeah, it came up for that, yes, for sure.
We definitely talk about this during the Viamanas and things like this, about these two cities, which are usually pulled into this whole thing. I mean, the archaeological locations themselves are extremely fascinating. Archaeologists and paleontologists, like going through all of these, like they said that these cities were extremely important, you know, in the development of the Indus Valley civilizations. They were extremely successful. They had actually a lot of qualities of life that a lot of other civilizations at the time hadn't even developed yet. They had like things like flush toilets. They had like evidence of infrastructure in the way they built their buildings.
Listen, if they had toilets that flushed, I'm almost 100% sure they had nukes.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, yes.
Because right now we have toilets that flush and we have nukes.
That's sound logic.
I mean, technically, squatty potties also flush. So, I mean,
yeah,
I mean, those aren't hard to make.
Hey, so
we have squatty potties. So we have nukes.
We're talking about atomic weapons, we're talking about like our first bomb, like that destructive damage and the fallout. But what about like a neutron bomb, like a high dose lethal radiation bomb with low actual physical force?
Like a dirty bomb.
Yeah, it's more like a, like chemical warfare, like you're just poisoning all these people, but instead of destroying the land.
I mean, sure. I mean, that could be a possibility, but even then, well, even some of that, perhaps like you'd have a lot of nuclear weapons have a thing where it's like, okay, you could possibly say that, oh, you wouldn't see any evidence of really radiation or radioactive substances, because those substances that are highly radioactive have very short half-lives. So, you know, they degrade over time into their components and whatever, they lose their electrons. Bloop,
it's why people live in Hiroshima and Nagasaki now.
Right.
It's,
those places
it's
you will
safe
find.
Now.
Yeah, they're safe now, 30, 40 years later, 50 years later. But the thing is that in some of these cities, you would still find isotopes that are products of these nuclear explosions that have half-lives of, you know, tens of thousands, if not millions of years. They're not necessarily harmful, but you would find them in perhaps less concentrations than you would actual like the highly radioactive materials, but you could possibly detect them in, you know, in a certain amount to kind of make it, viable theory that perhaps a nuclear weapon or some type of weapon that relied on nuclear fission perhaps had been detonated there.
Okay. So if depending on the type of bomb, it could be safe to live there after a short amount of time, or it could linger there for eons.
But either way, there would be proof, right? Like there would be some sort of proof, even this even in today's age.
Right. One of the other evidence.
But see, we keep saying that. That's a good point, Andrew. Today's age with the bombs that we make now, like maybe these things weren't exactly the same as what we can create now. Dan, I like the space beers you're drinking.
Got space beers?
They would take the same elements though, right? Like you'd still be able to, it's the same ingredients you would imagine, unless they're using some fucking space bombs or some shit.
But. So similar to how you described earlier when like with their descriptions of things, we are now trying to put descriptions on things based on what we know of our technology now. Like this kind of looks like a nuke. But that doesn't mean that they had an atomic bomb. Maybe they had something similar that we just don't even understand.
Like they mine this like plutonium and just like use the hand grenades.
Maybe, but that's what I'm saying is like we're trying to put our ideas and our understanding of like technology now back and fit it into these like puzzle pieces of like, well, what happened here? Would it have possibly been our technology we have now? I'm not saying it's not, but I'm saying maybe it was something similar, but just not quite the same. And that's why, you know, we're trying to jam a square peg or a triangle peg into a round asshole here.
A triangle probe into a round asshole is what you're saying. Yeah. Well, yeah, I guess if you're saying if say these were, because some people say, oh, it's that the Anunnaki or like the progenitor god race that made us. And then we, for whatever reason, we weren't cutting it anymore, and they're the
we
ones
fell out of favor.
Yeah, we fell out of favor, and they're so yeah. They have this advanced tech that we have no idea what it was. Maybe, yeah.
Yeah.
One of the other pieces of evidence that ancient astronaut theorists like to point to is that the presence of like things like vitrified sand. Or vitrified pieces of earth that they find in some of these locations, especially
glass.
in places. So it's like, yeah, which is normally a product that you can find vitrified sand. Like you go out into the Sahara Desert, you go into these like, largely sand covered or dirt covered places, and you'll find like vitrified earth, which is a product of lightning strikes. So lightning hits the ground, you know, such a heat that it turns it into a glass-like substance, and you can find this.
Well, yeah. Well,
but people it also actually occurs.
That, sorry, Dan. Just on that note, if you search it, you can search that, and when the lightning hits the sand, it like if you dig the sand around it, it looks like a giant piece of coral.
Yeah, it's super cool.
It's actually really cool. So it's pretty much at super high heat, like 2,000 degrees plus, like instant, it melts the glass, and then it solidifies back into a form. And they,
yeah. And I imagine if you were a wizard or a necromancer of some talent, you'd be able to use that for something. So
like casting shatter, you'd be able to make nice blocks of glass.
So you kill drag or what fucking, what do you call walker? White walkers? Dragon's glass, man.
Obsidian.
Yeah. That's obsidian.
Yeah. I don't know. Same shit.
Right. So yeah, because they found this when they first realized what it was from the first test blast, and they called it trinitite.
Right.
Which is, it's atomic glass, high heat glass. It can form from nuclear bombs. It can form from meteoroid or asteroid impacts, any type of rapid high heat.
Yes, but I was trying to look up because the trinitite is often radioactive, whereas like the stuff from lightning isn't.
the glass itself is radioactive.
Interesting.
Yeah, like the
right. So that's what makes it trinitite. That's what distinguishes trinitite from the vitrification, like just vitrified sand or fulgurite. I think it's fulgurite.
Yeah,
what it's called technically. And so yeah, so if it's radioactive, it's trinitite. If it's not, it's fulgurite or whatever you want to call it. And then so those are the two kind of different kinds. So it, but some of these things, again, they point to these signs of like vitrified sand for the ancient astronaut hypothesis. And it's like, well, it's not radioactive, at least not now. So you wouldn't be able to tell the difference.
Well, I mean, in my mind, like a lightning strike would cause a certain, it causes like the coral looking glass. But mm-hmm. if it was a actual nuclear strike or a bomb, like an airburst and the heat all coming down, it would be like a sheet of glass, I would think, right? Like it would melt like a wide, like a, you know, a radius of glass. It wouldn't just be like little specks in my mind.
Yeah, I mean, you'd have little pieces. Yeah, you'd have little pieces and stuff like that. So yeah, if you had like a strategically or a technologically thing, you would just see like an entire sheet of glass, I suppose, as opposed to like the little bits and pieces that they do find in some of these the sites. And then that is cited as evidence for an ancient atomic weapon being detonated over to some of these cities.
Well, yeah, that's what a lot of people say, but it's really just evidence of a high heat event in this case, if it's not, yep. if it's not radioactive.
Now, you have other, there's another one that we can talk about. So there's another location known as Lonar Crater. Now, Lonar Crater seems to be one of those perfect examples of both. It has both a literary, like a literary evidence, you know, legends that surround it, and also being like an example of like physical evidence. So those two things in together cooperating to kind of create this, perhaps what is the, some people say is the perfect evidence for, you know, an ancient atomic weapon. So this crater specifically was discovered in 1823. So it has been known about since then. Quick fact that I didn't know, it's actually the third largest saltwater lake in the world.
Lonar Crater has a lake inside of it.
Yeah. Huh. It's 500 feet deep. It's got a 600-foot circumference, and prior to its discovery by a British explorer, natives in the area held the legend that the crater had been created by an actual battle between the avatar of Vishnu Ooh. And the demon named Lonasura, which is the
gods,
which is where it gets its name from.
So a god battle. What they're saying,
right? Essentially, yeah. It came down to it's kind of described as a battle where the demon had been hiding in the Lonar Crater, where that was kind of it called its home. And in the legend, this avatar of Vishnu, one of the primary god, like the primary god of the Hindu religion, came down, you know, in order to answer the prayers of the villagers who were being tormented by this demon. And it's said that he kicked the rock off of the top of the crater. Like there had been a rock covering of some type or something like that, and he had struck it, revealing where the demon was residing, and then being able to go inside and, you know, do battle with the demon and then slay him.
Slay the demon.
That's fucking badass.
So for example, in Nick Redfern, if people are familiar with him, he's a very big paranormal supernatural author, in his book Weapon of the Gods, he kind of cites this as perhaps like an evidence for some type of like bunker buster weapon, like maybe not necessarily nuclear, could have been like a tactical nuke of some type, where it's like perhaps this demon or perhaps a group, it's, you know, according to Nick Redfern, it was that the whole thing sprouts from the Anunnaki, and then it gets to there. And then there are these sections, or there are like rebel factions with, you know, that were residing on Earth at a time. And then perhaps they had an underground bunker at this point in Lonar Crater where it has been located, and they fired some kind of weapon down into the crater, or perhaps even that's where it was, like some type of mountain or some type of geographic, you know, geological formation, and then created this crater, just like, boom.
A little Kamehameha, basically.
A three-episode charge-up is what we're saying here. Yeah. At least a three-episode charge. Bump.
It's cool because all this shit, like even with this, you know, like the ones that have chosen to like hide on Earth, it kind of reminds you kind of like, you know, getting to the Bible and like fallen angels and shit like that, right? That are like hanging out on Earth. Like
these are,
it's so cool how this stuff just ties in like to each other. Sides, right?
These and are it's the, so the ancient, the ancient astronauts. Gods, all the gods and all the religious texts, those are aliens. It makes sense. They didn't come from here. They came from somewhere else. Therefore, they're aliens. Now, so this crater, though, I'm looking at it. So it's like 500 meters deep or 500 feet deep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It seems like really, so if you're, I guess if you were to tunnel a bomb underneath the ground, it would make a deep crater like that. But if you blew it up on the surface, just like our first atomic bomb we blew up, it was a very shallow crater, 500 feet wide, but fairly shallow for the size of bomb.
But that's why they're saying that maybe this is some type of bunker buster, because from my knowledge of bunker busters, this, whatever would impact the ground would go deep and explode from underneath.
Well, yeah, because there was already, like, they were in a bunker, right? They were already underground is what I understand.
So it'd have to drill deep first before exploding.
Yeah.
All right, so you drop the bomb way down and penetrate the top, you know, the top strata or whatever, and then detonate underground. Perhaps like creating a, you know, then creating the crater as the ground kind of like filled in what was at the bottom or whatever exploded.
Right? Yeah, like maybe this was some sort of base.
Perhaps, but I mean, what I read and what you look into this Lonar crater, it is the prototype meteorite impact crater. Like it's a perfect, like it's perfect. Okay. Yeah, it's like exactly, that's, they first thought it was a volcanic crater because it's in like basalt, but then that's been overturned and they're like, no, this is most likely a meteorite crater. But as we've been saying, like those high heat events could be an atomic bomb. Like they kind of produce the same stuff.
The crater has been thoroughly studied, or from what I understand, it has been thoroughly studied. They've done dating on the crater itself and the material, geologic material surrounding the crater itself. So I think the two newest measurements that they have, they used what is known as argon radiometric dating and found that it dates somewhere between 570,000 years and 656,000
years. Dude, right at the time of the Anunnaki when they first came here.
Yes.
Isn't that what it is?
But that's what's tough for me, though, too.
I'm not sure on the exact
date of
the Anunnaki, now that I think about it.
Yeah, I can't remember, but it's hundreds of thousands of years. Sorry, Andrew?
When you look at it from like the Occam's razor standpoint, right? Like we still to this day have fucking asteroid shower or meteor showers, asteroids hitting the Earth and stuff like that, right? Like, what if we not have fucking nuclear bombs coming from fucking space randomly, right? Like, we don't have that. We have evidence of one happening. And then, well, in our, you know, and as long as, you know, looking back in literature, we don't have any evidence of it happening, right? So, like, even with all these stuff, there is no proper sources for any of these claims whatsoever.
Now, the
just claims.
There's
fun claims.
There was some interesting things about Lonar Crater that I thought was that the fact that the accepted age was 52,000 years old, and then, as you said, Dan, the two newest ones dated at 570,000 years old, or somewhere between 570, 656. Well, some of what I was looking into is that sometimes atomic tests can affect the reading of like the carbon dating and stuff, and it can make items like this appear much
older,
earlier than they are, much earlier than they are, which is why.
So it's kind of like when you check your taxes and your taxes go down. Is that what it's kind
well,
of
no. So thing? I'm like the test, the initial test where they're like, they figured it was 52,000 years old. They're looking at
your credit score,
those tests are affected by potentially atomic blasts. And they have evidence of that at like the Trinity site of like carbon dating and stuff around there of it kind of fucking up those tests.
It's not accurate readings.
So it's like when they're doing those new argon tests and they're like, wow, this is fucking way older than we actually thought. Perhaps that's because the tests that they were running before that we thought were, you know, very accurate were being thrown off by the, you know, some sort of atomic test.
Interesting. Right. Yeah, perhaps.
And I would, I'd totally be down with that, except like the fact that a lot of the radioactive substances is like, they all degrade and all of that stuff that would probably affect that kind of dating would probably have decayed by now. If it were like at least 1,000 years ago.
Well, what but I'm saying, yeah, well, maybe whatever happened to this crater is older than that. Right. Forget that. Forget our concept of time. Like say if the accepted age was 52,000 years ago, right. Maybe there was a civilization at this time. That's a long time ago. Right. And maybe that's just the whatever atomic test that happened, say 52,000 years ago. Yes, all the isotopes and stuff have degraded. There's nothing left of that, except when we do the carbon dating, we're like, yeah, it's 52,000 years old, when it's really not. Right. This crater is 570,000 years old based on other tests. So maybe like whatever happened at that time period has like captured a moment in time. I'm not saying it was an atomic test. I'm just saying maybe perhaps something happened and our tests, we just don't know enough about, you know, that long ago. Cause it's just so long. It's a guessing game.
Yeah. I mean, sure. It is. It's, you have one measurement and then you're like, actually it's 10 times older. You're like, okay.
Yeah, I'm not read up enough. I'm not well-versed enough.
That's
like geologic dating mechanisms to be like, okay, argon is like the definitive what they use right now. I mean, I could probably get back to you on that as to what it is. Yeah. But right now, off the top of my head, I'm not 100% sure as to what is the en vogue geologic dating.
Dan, data. I would like by next case file a 400-page report on all methods of geological dating.
It doesn't need to be 400. 20 pages is fine.
All right, I'll take like, a 20-page. I'll take a 20-page. It
doesn't need to be 400 pages.
That's need a lot of pictures in it. That's what I need.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's pictures, a lot of pictures and graphs.
I'm not going to be able to fucking read excited.
It. Yeah, like, pictures know, and graphs. That's all I need.
My appendix is going to be
at least 25 pages of stalagmites. And 20 pages of stalactites.
One of the other pieces of evidence for ancient advanced weaponry that I found really interesting that I had never really heard before for researching for this topic was that there is a certain number of what are known as vitrified forts, which we've already mentioned already that the, you know, vitrification, the process of where, like, you know, applying high heat to a solid object, you know, makes it turn into like a glass like substance, all of that.
Yeah, like burns the silicon or whatever. And
yeah, melting these rocks and, you know, solid substances into a liquid and then it's solidifying and very quickly afterwards. So there are apparently around 24 ancient fortifications across Scotland.
Weird.
That exhibit all the typical qualities of ancient forts of that time, in respects of, you know, defensive placement, you know, where you would put a fort if you were trying to defend a certain piece of land or a certain territory.
Attack.
like a land based, you know, human attack. But what makes these forts especially exceptional is that they all seem to completely lack mortar or lime of cement. So they don't have anything that joins. They don't really seem to have anything that joins the stones together. They don't have the usual binding agents that a fort, like usual forts of this time would, you know, that the architects would use at this time. So in place of mortar, the blocks appear to have been just placed on top of each other, carefully placed on top of each other, and then fused together as if they had been exposed to some type of intense heat source.
Well, this is Scotland, right? That we're talking about?
Yeah. Yes.
Fucking dragons. Simple. Fucking simple, boys. Fucking
yes. Dragon fire.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Sure. But it does. I'm
Bingo, bango, bongo. Case files closed.
So no mortar, just seemingly these rocks had just fused together.
Yeah.
By dragon's fire.
It's interesting. It's some sort of like ancient welding technique almost. That's what I was thinking about of like, you know, potentially they had figured out how to like, because what do welders get? It's 6,000 degrees? What do welders get?
It depends on the welder.
To have affected the stone in such a way, I think it's estimated that temperatures somewhere in the area to 1,000 degrees Celsius, so 2,000 degrees Fahrenheit, would have been required.
It's getting pretty hot.
Yep.
And pretty hot.
I like starting a fire as much as next guy. But is there anything like accessible to people like that, like people of this age, where you could light it on fire and it would potentially get this hot? Like, I'm trying to think if there's anything logical before I can say that, like, maybe this thing did get hit by some sort of insane heat wave.
I think the original theories were that perhaps these that these forts had been set on fire, like, ceremoniously after being captured, or you know, the land had been conquered at some point by, you know, warring tribes or warring factions, and that they would set these entire, like, they would surround these forts with type of, like, you know, a bonfire. They essentially have a giant bonfire of these forts to burn them down, like, symbolically. And so you set it around and kind of set these things on fire. That was kind of the original theory. And then later theories put forth the idea that perhaps that these stones had been bonded in such a way that the original architects perhaps thought that this would make the walls stronger, that the applying this type of heat would make them stronger. But in reality, it has the opposite effect.
I mean, we do know for a fact that William Wallace could shoot lightning bolts out of his arse.
And fireballs
could
from his
Could that
eyes.
Do it? Exactly. And that could eyes. Probably fucking do that, boys.
So.
But it's not dragons. It's William fucking Wallace.
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing...
Pretty sure I cracked this one.
Wallace or it's the Targaryens, one of the two.
Yeah. But yeah, it's still a legitimate mystery as to why these forts exhibit these properties and why they're vitrified at some points, because the vitrification actually, like, when they look at these forts, it's not uniform throughout the structures. There's certain points where they're just like, they have this kind of quality where it's like they've obviously been applied a high heat at some point, and then some other parts are not
there.
And
I mean,
it's still very much a mystery as to why and how they did, you know, ancient people had done this.
Well, and there's other, you know, parts to this that when I was kind of looking, you know, going down some rabbit holes, there's some bridges in, like, the Yellow Mountains of China that they're like ornate bridges, like carved between two solid rocks. And people sometimes point to that going like, why would these people carve this bridge between these two solid rocks? Like, it doesn't make sense. And then that some people were theorizing that, like, perhaps these were structures. These rocks were actually structures that had been melted. And the bridge is the only thing that survived. And this, looking into this case file, where's, you know, those, like, those really ornate carvings of, like, the fronts of buildings. Is it in Jordan where they're, like, in the kind of the middle of the nowhere, they're carved in a rock face?
Is it about Petra?
Petra? Yes. Some people said, like it, you know, we've talked about before on the show, like, you know, we will never experience human boredom like the boredom of people in the past. But they said that, like, it doesn't really make sense to just carve these things into the side of a stone and just leave it. But perhaps if you think that these were buildings that had been melted, and that those entrances are the only surviving pieces of what was, you know, these buildings that had been melted and have just been sitting there over time getting weathered.
Oh, so you're saying what's left there was the protected and other stuff got melted?
Everything, like the stone and stuff, where people are like, it's just carved into the side of the stone, nothing else. Well, the stone was actually other stuff as well, but it was melted from some sort of high heat, whether that's an ancient atomic weapon or maybe some sort of directed energy weapon. You know, I don't know, but that's some of the theories on this thing. It kind of ties in with the vitrified forts.
Is there any chance that it's just art though? Like, somebody,
it's pretty elaborate art, man. Right. Like,
I mean, but that the world's full of elaborate art.
Humans are pretty artistic.
Carved fucking statues and shit out of that stuff all the time.
In the middle of nowhere?
It was the middle of nowhere now.
Yeah, it's middle of nowhere now.
Exactly. Because it used to be a huge ass building. Used to be the Microsoft Towers.
that was a center of technology. Yeah, hey, I don't know, man. Like
that was Silicon Valley.
Yeah, the ancient Silicon Valley. That's where they developed the bomb, probably. Yeah, I don't know. There's tons of crazy shit around the world. They're like, how and why? A lot of how and why is around.
In the world, let's leave the world. Let's leave Earth.
Let's get the fuck out of here.
Let's take it real far. There is a theory. There's another theory, like taking this out to its furthest extent, is that perhaps that nuclear war was not only perhaps only isolated to Earth, but perhaps there had been a atomic war perpetrated on the red planet, Mars. John Brandenburg is a plasma physicist who got his degree from UC Davis, and he has a theory that Martian life was perhaps actually destroyed with nukes.
100%. My books.
He cites that he gave an interview with Supreme Master Television.
That's a great channel.
SMT?
SMT, yeah. Baby.
Oh, shit. Yeah. Fuck.
Which is a station run by a person titled the Supreme Master Qinghai International Association Cult. And Brandenburg notes that Mars had perhaps two humanoid civilizations called Cydonia and Utopia, which it would be strange to me where they would get those names, as those are both.
I was just going to ask.
Well, yeah, Cydonia is where they found the face on Mars.
Right. So according to him, is that perhaps these two ancient civilizations were perhaps at the technological level similar to Egypt at the time.
Okay.
So this is where you would probably get the pyramids
on
Egypt.
The Egypt that the fake media teaches, or the Egypt where we had power plants running off the Nile?
That's a good question.
That one, the second one.
Yeah.
Probably the second one.
Let's go with the second one.
Right. His evidence that he cites as proof of this nuclear war that had taken this apocalyptic nuclear war, which wiped out both civilizations and all of the atmosphere on Mars and made it the, essentially mildly radioactive wasteland that it is today, is that he says that there is a high concentration of xenon-129 in the atmosphere and krypton-80, which are detected in abundance along with uranium and thorium on the Mars surface, in some places that relative to Mars meteorites, like it would seem that these places have high concentrations of these materials, which would signify that perhaps they had been attacked, or these are materials that would be detected in a nuclear bomb.
Yeah, I mean, he started saying it was this like nuclear event, but that he progresses into saying that these are actually ET species that wiped each other out. Like when he first presented his theory, he's a plasma physicist. He seems like he's got good credentials. He's like, oh, judging by these isotopes and these and this and this, Mars was subject to a massive event.
Sure.
That would that led to its demise. And then he progresses as the years go by to Mars was the central of two warring civilizations that had harnessed nuclear power and wiped each other out. And in the process also destroyed their atmosphere, rendering the planet uninhabitable. You're like, awesome.
Yeah. Not for the Martians.
Now we're trying to go back. Or take it farther. There were two warring factions blew up the planet, fucked up the atmosphere, realized they're toasted, needed to get to the next planet that was inhabitable, which was Earth. And that was about 300, 400,000 years ago, and they were the Anunnaki.
And that planet was called Krypton. Yes.
Well, the other thing is too,
it's
is
not like, red sun though.
You know, if there's two, say, you know, like time is really against us here, because with Mars, something like that happening on Mars, I mean, like that could have happened a couple hundred thousand years ago, where there's like an unbelievably two huge atomic blasts. And then, you know, the planet's just been sitting there getting absolutely just blasted by the sun's radiation because the atmosphere was torched, right? Like, so maybe it didn't look like how it looked now, right? But after these bombs, it just slowly has deteriorated to what we see now is this barren landscape. But maybe that was a slow burn after these two atomic bombs were set off. And maybe it was something like where whatever they did with these atomic bombs, maybe these civilizations, they're new. They were like, hey, we've basically pushed ourselves off the edge. This planet's dying now. Like, we've killed it. And there's no coming back. Yeah, whatever is happening. And so, you know, maybe they sent some sort of like germ bomb or something. We've talked about that before to Earth, right?
So are you saying that the atomic bombs destroyed the atmosphere, or did it like knock it off of fucking...
No,
like,
I'm not saying...
the bombs knock it off?
I'm just saying that maybe whatever bombs went off that he thinks, maybe like we don't know the technology because we're trying to put...
They're
what
aliens.
We understand... Right, they're aliens. So maybe these bombs were similar to atomic bombs, but once these two things fired off, maybe that it like whatever is happening on the planet right then, it pushed them over the edge where it's like, hey, our atmosphere is deteriorating at a rapid pace now since these two bombs went off. Our two main cities are destroyed.
What if it knocked it closer, like knocked it off its fucking rotation closer to the sun, and that's what destroyed the fucking... Do you think a bomb could do that? And that could destroy the atmosphere?
Well, it's not closer to the sun than us, so...
That's fair. So you got to figure out just an atmospheric destroying bomb.
Yeah, right? Like, I
it'd be fucking cool.
It's
scary, but...
Terrifying.
Yeah, big time.
And I mean, the theories of like... Mars being a habitable planet have been around forever of like at one time that there, it may have been a habitable planet.
Well, yeah, they do think it had flowing water and like it had a whole bunch of stuff. And for whatever reason, its atmosphere was stripped away. And they think that was some cosmic event or a slow burn of a cosmic event slowly just leached off their atmosphere
but maybe it wasn't.
Or maybe it wasn't.
It was caused.
Self-imposed. Destruction.
Well, the fact that we go ahead.
I was going to say like, and people point to that, especially Brandenburg, you know, he points to evidence of rovers and stuff of it looking like in some of these pictures on Mars surface, they, you know, seemingly can see some of these rocks and stuff look similar to bricks, right? Like brick shapes and debris and building debris.
It's for me, it's like, it's just, I feel like it's just an answer we're never going to get because we have like, we've got lost civilizations on our own planet.
Yeah, we don't even know
that we'll never be able to find, you know? And then it's like, you think we're going to figure that shit out on a different planet? Like, no way.
Yeah. Well, that was just one little robot. Like,
that's what I mean,
little,
right?
Like, that thing is fucking huge. Guys,
it's like, but even with truck, us, with our technology on our current planet, we still can't figure out where all these fucking lost civilizations are.
Yeah, we're still piecing together the history of, you know, our own planet and now our closest neighbor, which is still pretty neat because we got a whole fucking robot over there doing stuff. So that's pretty neat.
Pretty soon you're going to have Elon Musk himself, King of Mars. He's going to be over there.
Yes. King of Mars. Emperor of Mars.
Now, my final thought, if we're getting there, is
wrap it up.
As for like an ancient atomic weapon, I don't like the phrasing of that. Because again, we're trying to pinhole what we have now onto something that was then. So it may have been similar. But I subscribe to that there was a civilization before us that we don't understand. That was way more advanced than we would like to give credit to in modern day education and stuff. We're learning new stuff every day. When we finally dig up Göbekli Tepe, I'm sure there's going to be mysteries and numbers hidden in the architecture. But I don't think this is out of the question. I don't think some sort of ancient weapon of this, it wouldn't surprise me if this, and if that's the case, if you know, an ancient civilization misused these kind of weapons and they wiped their civilization off the map, then that would mean to me that like harnessing nuclear energy is some sort of filter, whether it's the Great Filter, you know, one of these filters of civilizations where this is just a stepping stone you get to, and you either, you know, you can use it and harness it, or you just blow yourself up, right? Like mad scientist style. Do I believe in some of these stories? It's hard with the Mahabharata because, like we said, a lot of the stuff isn't cited. It's not sourced. It's just attributed to the Mahabharata. And I'll attribute one too. The Mahabharata says that a nukes nukes were flying, baby. It says that nukes were flying, baby. It's in there somewhere. Look it up.
Direct quote.
Direct quote from Mahabharata. Nukes were flying, baby.
And David Childress.
But that's the problem with that is we just don't know. Now, I think that, you know, I just think we don't give ancient civilizations enough credit. I think we were probably more technologically advanced than we can fathom, to be honest. And whatever reason, just like how, you know, Rome's civilization was lost and crumbled, but you know, in a smaller scale, I believe that there was a civilization that lost it all, like either blew ourselves off the map. And you know, I don't think human history is as young as we think.
I would 100% agree with that one. We keep finding new stuff all the time. Okay, I'll go real quick here. I think all ancient texts, like all like the main ancient texts, like sometimes we make the joke like, oh, those people are just bored back then. I think those people were not bored and they were obsessed with watching the heavens and the stars and like the sky. And the stories of Sodom and Gomorrah and these stories from the Vedic texts, these are all like from, I think these are events they witnessed in the sky. And I think like the raining of, like when they say like the destruction of cities or like the end of these people, I think these are like, these are cataclysm events, either whether it be meteor, volcano, you know, something. And I think meteorite impacts are more common onto the planet than we give credit for because we've only been looking for a couple hundred years. And if they're air bursts, like you don't, there might not be craters. Like there's a whole bunch of reasons like, oh, well, if there was craters that ended, you know, the Younger Dryas, we would find them. You're like, well, maybe not. Maybe. Yeah, Andrea, a little smirk.
There it is.
I'm just saying, if it's not just the Younger Dryas, that's only a few, like 12, 13,000 years ago.
Take another drink.
Zell, to your point, like you look at Tunguska, the Tunguska event, and that kind of lines up with some of these descriptions, right?
Right?
Like the trees set ablaze, right? Elephants, you run, well, they weren't running around in Russia, but I'm like, you know, that could all be,
well, they,
you know, yeah, it was caribou, sure. Right? Wasn't it caribou or something with Tunguska?
Yeah. So I think that all these stories, and these are like long witnessed stories of human accounts from, you know, thousands and thousands of years ago. And they've been passed down through generations, different translations through different cultures and different people. So do I think ancient atomic weapons? Probably not. But ancient advanced civilizations that would watch the stars and they would write stuff down and they would kind of give events meaning and stories behind it. And I think a lot of these are just human beings witnessing the demise of cities or civilizations around the globe. And they just document it. And then thousands of years later, we come back, we're like, oh, maybe it was atomic weapons, or maybe it was a giant airburst meteorite that flattened that whole fucking place. And then that was an act of God. God punished those people for being sinners and
sodomites.
And then a couple thousand years later, you got some people who twist that word and then start cults with it. That's what I think. That's it.
I like it.
So for me, like even to begin with this, I decided, I'm like, if I'm going to be able to make any type of, you know, thought process or conclusion at the end of this, I have to even like, I have no idea how nuclear weapons work. I have no clue. I don't even know how they exist.
So,
right?
Advanced, so
I started doing a little bit of research, right? And to actually develop a nuclear weapon, you need access to fissile material.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's only two ways really to do it. You need to separate U-235
from natural uranium,
yeah,
right, which takes massive levels of electrical production. You need like crazy amounts of sophisticated engineering skills, or you need a nuclear reactor, right? So now, even to believe that we had like that type of technology back then, right? This would have had to happen in a vacuum without leaving any evidence around on surrounding cultures or infrastructure whatsoever. There would be nuclear waste and shit like that left behind, which we have no real evidence of. And then like you look at it, we were barely able to construct nuclear weapons in the 40s. Barely, right? But it took one out of every 1,000 Americans working on these weapons to get them produced, right? So it's just, for me, you know, we don't have any evidence of this, but yet we have tons of evidence of natural fucking occurrences that cause these exact same fucking significant events. Yep. Right? Like, and so for me, it's so hard to fucking fathom that.
Yeah.
Right? That's just kind of where I stand.
That would be the academic reasoning, I think, behind many of those.
For me, I find the idea that there were ancient battles between gods and demigods, whether they were, either extraterrestrially enhanced humans or extraterrestrials themselves, fighting it out with giant weapons of mass destruction and, you know, energy manipulation and all that shit. It's pretty fucking cool.
Badass sci-fi. Really neat.
Straight out of a comic book.
Straight out of a fucking comic book. Mm-hmm. Sounds cool. But like Andrew said, yeah, you would need a ton of infrastructure in order to build some of these, to actually produce these weapons. Humans would, you know, if you're off-world production, it'd be a different story. And we do have a lot of evidence that perhaps some of these things were caused by this. While researching for this, I found something that was a little bit pretty interesting and going down the kind of rabbit hole. I always remember when we mentioned earlier, like the Mahabharata. Like the Mahabharata is usually is cited as this kind of text that's got this mystic, you know, esoteric text that goes back thousands of years, and it being like, okay, this is what happened. And then I remember Ancient Aliens, the TV show, kind of coming around and being like, yeah, maybe perhaps, like, you know, especially Eric Von Daniken. We have talked to Anna Von Daniken. I have asked Eric Von Daniken questions. I've interacted with him on a personal level. And yeah, I've been
Dan
like,
Dan will also watch him die one time in the elevator.
Yeah. I've been in an elevator with Eric Von Daniken. And, you know, one of the things I remember asking him was being like, you know, what do you find the most compelling evidence or supporting evidence for the theory of, you know, ancient astronauts and that? And he said to me, and if you go and listen to watch our YouTube video and listen to the interview that we did, you know, he just says it's there in the text. That's what it is. The Bible, the ancient text. This is proof. Okay, I guess. For me, it's not great because I'm like, okay, these ancient texts, at best for me, they are stylized accounts. Like Zell said, they're stylized accounts of something that happened in the past, or, you know, it's stuff that perhaps happened overnight, or stuff that probably could have happened within a month or something.
Right.
You know, an entire city collapsed, is an earthquake, or, you know, airburst meteor, or even, you know, some type of plundering by roving bands of, you know, savages or whatever could possibly have happened, or a gradual decline that happened. And then they said it was overnight. Something like that, you know, and at worst, these texts are complete fabrications of something that happened. And they're just like, okay, I don't know what happened, so I'll just make it up.
Ancient sci-fi.
Sure. Yeah. Fan fiction, you know, at some point. So I'd kind of say something like that. What I find kind of worrisome is that while researching for this, I found this weird little line of kind of, or undercurrent. Actually, it's something that's been happening in India for since the early 2000s or even like the mid 90s, is that there's this thing called Hindutva, which is I think it's like a political party or some type of like social action party, which is kind of dead set on making Hindu culture, the religion Hindu, like the dominant and predominant religion and culture in India, even though India has a Muslim, you know, they have a Muslim population that makes up about like 14% of the population itself. And they are very dead set on legitimizing and trying to set the Mahabharata and the Vedic texts as something to be taken literally. They are trying to rewrite history and pose these things like we've, you know, that has been, that is come to be popularized in, you know, in some of the ancient aliens and ancient astronaut hypothesis and things like this, that these cultures were, you know, the Indian culture, the Hindu culture was ultra advanced from the time. And then it was somehow struck down by whatever.
Gods.
And it's very strange. I mean, if you look it up, you can look it up. You can look up articles. There's plenty of this stuff about like the current political party trying, which is essentially like a Hindu nationalist party trying to rewrite history, having meetings about how can they rewrite the textbooks to make Hindu culture the predominant culture. And then therefore, you know, making everybody else kind of lower, making Hindus the predominant. And if somebody can correct me, if somebody can be like, give me an insight into this, but I've read a number of articles kind of being like, like this sounds a little bit worrisome about this.
Is Sikh the predominant religion then right now?
No,
Hindu's trying to overtake it. So Hindu already is.
Right. Hindu is. And then like India is a multicultural place. Like it is comprised of a number of cultures and religions and things like this. And a lot of, you know, the right now, the predominant reason or the predominant theory of about, you know, the population of India was like it was all migration, you know, migration out of Mesopotamia and those places like this into things. But the new current kind of seems to be the direction of reasoning is that the current political party wants to make it seem like Aryans like came out of the Himalayas. And then that was the progenitor race. That India was the cradle of civilization.
Mm.
So not Mesopotamia.
No. That's what they seem to be support. They seem to be supporting that idea and pushing for academics in India and certain, there are certain like social action groups and certain committees that they have been established like since the 2000, like the late, you know, just five or six years ago that they're trying to actually rewrite the textbooks, rewrite history and being like, no, the Vedic texts, this is real. This is what happened. And I find that a bit disconcerting.
So yeah, what you're saying is there was nukes?
Depends who you ask.
According to the Hindus, yes.
That's a fun topic. It's cool to look into.
Yeah, super fun.
I mean, there's even if they're not nukes, just the history of a lot of these places is just cool on its own. So.
Yeah, if we find hard evidence about this stuff, like, you know, plasma lances, like taking out whole cities and shit like that, I'd be like, yeah.
All the crazy energy nuts of the universe super in one fun strike.
Now, before we get into Theorite of the Week, I just really wanted to give a quick mention that if you're on our Patreon or you've been humming and hawing about getting on it, we have a new show out on our Patreon that there's going to be some more on called Sports Conspirators. Very similar to this show, but we just talk about strictly sports conspiracies. Episode one's on the Montreal Screwjob. It's going to be Patreon only until we get a bunch. So if you want to listen to it, that intrigues you, you can support your boys. Get on patreon.com/alientheoristpodcast.
It's going to be a while. We got to build up at least 10 episodes before that shit goes live. So if you're interested in it, make sure you get on Patreon and listen. And we want your feedback.
We're taking feedback. So it's like as we're trying to grow that show and make it into something, we're taking live feedback of what you want to see, segments, guests. So if you want to be a part of building a show, get on our patreon.com/alientheoristpodcast. Listen to it. Let us know what you think. Let us know what you want to see in the future. Let us know some sports conspiracies that you'd love to hear.
We already got some feedback. My hot take on Yokozuna being a bad wrestler.
Ooh, got torched.
Yeah. He wasn't a bad wrestler.
He had a bad gimmick.
Anyways, let's get into Theorite of the Week. This week, you know what? Well deserved. Mm-hmm, it's going out to longtime Discord member, legend. Sodomize. You know, it's kind of fitting for her name's kind of fitting for this episode.
What?
Well, Sodom. And we were talking about Sodom. Oh, Sodom, right. Okay.
Gotcha. Brain's always got Sodom on the fucking.
Yeah, he's always got Sodomize.
She single-handedly has taken it upon herself to organize a spooky gift exchange among our Discord channel. She's put it together. The deadline is October 1st to get into the spooky gift exchange where you'll be paired up. I'm in it. So you might be buying a gift for me. I might be buying a gift for you.
Who knows?
I don't know. It's going to be wild.
I don't know. I don't know if you want that because you're probably not going to get anything because we did a Christmas gift exchange and Braden didn't get anybody nothing.
Yeah, I did. I gave everyone headshots, signed headshots of myself.
Nothing.
That's what I give.
Shafted the boys.
That's what I give everyone. Signed headshot of myself.
I didn't get one.
You probably lost it. Anyways, I'll give you one to put up in your studio, that right above your left shoulder there, that little square.
I love that.
I'll measure that out for me and I'll make sure it fits right in there.
Okay.
Well deserved.
Sodomize, thank you for being a fucking absolute legend on Discord, through the running challenge, just always being a positive member of the community, calling into Cosmic Channels. She's just overall OGP, absolute
she's
legend.
She's a beauty. Fucking beauty.
Hell yeah. Well deserved.
Well deserved.
Well yeah. deserved. All right. Braden, I already gave you the sales pitch, but also, if you're listening to the free version, you realize that there might be a couple ads on there. You want to skip those ads, get rid of them, support your boys. Find the link in the podcast description. This week's newest supporters, Gavin Gerard.
He's back, baby!
Or is it Javin Gerard?
Javin Gerard?
Well, you said Gavin Gerard.
So. I thought it was Gavin Gerard.
Okay.
Either one. We'll take
anyways, he's back. I recognize that name.
We'll take any of those. Strom goes up to a full year pledge. Save yourself a little bit of dough. Devroy. Matt Schmidt. Ben Clark. Mark Pearson. James Kukas, Lisa Fowler, Mandy Norton, Eric Meza, Joel Weathers, Savannah Hall, OJ Dumain, like it, Jonathan O'Keefe, Ryan Hensherick.
Rylan
Hansherick, and last but not least, Bill Caffrey. Thank you very much for supporting the show.
And as we always say at the end of these things, keep those eyes on the skies.
See you in After Hours.
Control of your growing company's finances with Bill Spend and Expense, the free-to-use spend management software powered by the Bill Divvy Corporate Card. With credit lines from $50,000 to $5 million, Bill Spend and Expense is here to help you thrive. Say goodbye to manual expense reports and juggling multiple cards, and say hello to saving time and eliminating wasteful spend. Try Bill Spend and Expense today at bill.com/promo500 and get $500. Terms and conditions apply. Advertised credit ranges are not guaranteed and are determined at approval. Card issued by Cross River Bank. Member FDIC.